Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for September 14th. We'll begin our reading today with the front page article entitled Third Wind Farm Proposed for the County by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. Vermilion County's third wind farm recently kicked off its development phase, which includes land acquisition. A press release from Tri Global Energy states this would be the region's largest wind project. A 255-megawatt, 15,000-acre wind project, Vermilion Wind, projected to be the largest in east-central Illinois, has commenced its development phase in Vermilion County with several key milestones in place, according to the press release. The wind development project is spearheaded by national renewable energy leader Tri Global Energy, which develops and owns wind, solar, and energy storage projects in Illinois, Indiana, Texas, Nebraska, and Virginia. Tri Global Energy, TGE, has long been the largest developer of wind power in Texas, the state which leads the United States in production of wind energy. However, Illinois ranks sixth in the country for wind power production, and TGE's founder and chairman, John Billingsley, feels the state is poised to reap even more benefits through harnessing its assets for the development of wind energy, the press release states. We've been able to form beneficial relationships with more than 3,500 participating landowners and community investors in Texas, Billingsley said. We found the same great land resources and entrepreneurial spirit here in Vermilion County, and this project will pay benefits locally for decades to come. The Vermilion Wind Project is located just south of the Little Vermilion River, between Georgetown and Ridge Farm. Wind, utility interconnection, and preliminary environmental studies are underway. Development efforts are expected to continue over the next 2 to 3 years. The TGE Vermilion County Wind Project is led by Project Manager Pete Bover, who is on-site and meeting with land and homeowners. Land acquisition will continue through 2020, even though a majority of leases will be signed by mid-October 2020, Bovier said. Transmission easements and good neighbor agreements will follow the initial lease signing efforts. We look forward to working with the Vermilion community cooperatively. To develop this project with them and to generating meaningful economic opportunity for project participants and the surrounding region. Bover and his team estimate that during the next 25 years, Vermilion Wind will generate approximately $55 million in landowner payments, along with an estimated $47 million tax revenues for local schools, roads, and more. During the estimated 6 to 9 month construction phase, about 150 full-time jobs will be created. Vermilion County Board Chairman Larry Bonn said they have not done anything formal with us, referring to the required permitting process. The county's other two wind farms are outside Rossville and on Route 49. Tri Global Energy is an independent renewable energy originator and developer in the U.S. The company is a leading wind developer in Texas and among the top five in the U.S. for projects under construction. More than 4,000 megawatts of TGE's renewable energy projects are either in late-stage development, financing, construction, or operation, including wind, solar, and energy storage projects. Founded in 2009, Tri Global Energy's mission is to improve communities through local economic development generated by originating and commercializing renewable energy projects. Tri Global Energy is headquartered in Dallas with regional development offices in Lubbock, Texas, El Paso, and Forreston, Illinois, and Reynolds and Hartford City, Indiana. For more information, visit www.triglobalenergy.com. Our next article is entitled Safety Shield, Oakwood Teens Project Keeps Others Safe, by Carol Rem, Oakwood. An Oakwood Junior High School 8th grader was able to put his knowledge of 3D printing to good use this summer to help out teachers and healthcare professionals. As COVID-19 threatened to shut down schools this past spring, Oakwood Junior High Student Council Advisor Luann Grimm suggested that the Student Council make personal protection equipment, PPE, for the Oakwood District 76 teachers as a service project. "We wanted to do something to give back," Grimm said, of the project. "I have relatives in the medical field, and I had started making masks for them. We have a 3D printer here at the school, but it wasn't big enough to do what we wanted." Jackson Dudley, who was the student council vice president last year, ran with Grimm's idea. "When I was in 7th grade, I had an enrichment class where we had to design animals and then make them with the 3D printer," Jackson said. "That past knowledge came in handy when Jackson created the PPE. Using overhead projector transparencies as a face shield, Jackson made a thin headband on a 3D printer that holds the plastic shield in place. The headband was designed by Danville resident David Uhas, who provided the prototype to use as a pattern. Part of the project was designing it," Jackson said. "He, Uhas, came up with the model and we just printed it. He has multiple 3D printers and we knew him from church," Jackson's dad, John Dudley, said of Uhas. "We've known him for years." Through the Regional Office of Education School Works Program, which covers both Vermilion and Champaign counties, Jackson was able to borrow the program's 3D printer. They covered the printer and some of the materials, and the student council provided extra filament," Dudley said. "The colorful headbands are made of layered plastic filament that took a while to create one at a time on a 3D printer. From start to finish, it takes about an hour and 20 minutes to make one," Dudley said. "We had a laptop hooked up to it, and we had it in the basement. As soon as quarantine happened, we started," Jackson said. "It took most of the summer." At the time, Jackson's mom, Courtney Dudley, was the assistant principal at Oakwood Grade School. "She reached out to the teachers in the school district, and the demand was too high for us to fill all the orders. John Dudley said we did end up making more than 150 of them. About a week before the start of school, Jackson delivered the face masks to Oakwood Grade School to be distributed throughout the district. The grade school took 100 of them, and the polyclinic expressed interest in taking the rest," Dudley said. Jackson, who was interested in pursuing a career in engineering and design, said he was pleased with the way the project turned out. "I'm just happy that people can be safe," the teen said. The next front page article is entitled "Council to Act on Casino Zoning" by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. The Danville City Council on Tuesday will act on rezoning property for the proposed casino. The meeting will be at 6 p.m. Tuesday via teleconference. The public can listen to the meeting via YouTube live audio streaming services with the link provided on the city's website at www.cityofdanville.org. Public comments, which will be read during the meeting, can be submitted via email to cityclerk@cityofdanville.org by 4:30 p.m. Tuesday. Due to the rezoning request not being recommended for approval by a majority of Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission members earlier this month, the rezoning needs a two-thirds vote of the Danville City Council, or 10 of 14 aldermen, to be approved. Some commissioners were worried about the future uses of the site with the zoning change and the increased traffic at that location. One of the zoning commissioners who voted against it was Ted Vaqueta. He recused himself from the casino zoning petition vote last year on a property closer to the interstate owned by River Bend Development. Lou Mervis Ayers, and with a different development team due to Vaqueta's employer, Mervis Industries' financial interest in the project. This rezoning is for 204 Eastgate Drive from I-2 General Industrial Zoning to B-3 General Business Zoning for Danville Development's LLC's proposed temporary casino. In other business, the City Council will consider approving a contract and professional services agreement for construction engineering for the Northwest Sanitary Sewer Service Area Reconstruction and budget amendment to the Storm and Sanitary Sewer Fund. City Engineer Sam Cole said the Denmark Road project with the sewer project, a precursor to this project, could be bid in January. Also Tuesday, the council will consider appointing Doug Knapp to the Danville Public Building Commission, approving contracts for fleet liability insurance and ADA paratransit service, authorizing disposal of an automated garbage truck. Also, authorizing application for funding to demolish abandoned properties, a contract for fire services at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, approving a memorandum of understanding with ONI Risk Partners, and authorizing a budget amendment and amending the plan for community development block grant funds. And here is a staff report entitled County on Warning List. Danville. Vermilion County is among the 30 counties in Illinois that are at a warning level for COVID-19 for the week August 30th through September 5th. Doug Toole, Vermilion County Health Department Administrator, said, "We were placed at the warning level because of our numbers of new cases per 100,000. Anything over 50 is considered excessive. And because of an increase in our emergency department visits for COVID-19-like illnesses, increased by 20% over the last 2 weeks. That same week, the county's positivity rate increased to 3.8%. While that is still under the warning level, it is not the direction we want to be headed," he said. "We tested more people that week, which normally reduces the positivity rate, but this week they increased the rate. That means we are seeing a wider community spread." He expects the county to stay on the warning list for the week of September 6th through the 12th. "This is a warning and an opportunity for us to remind and encourage businesses and residents to be thoughtful," he said. "If we remain on the warning list, and other counties in our region do as well, the state might temporarily tighten up some of the guidelines to aid in social distancing and help us to return to a lower risk situation." On Friday, Toole reported 13 new cases, 2 in their 70s, 1 in his or her 60s, 4 in their 50s, 1 in his or her 30s, 4 in their 20s, and a toddler. That brings the total number of positive cases to 418. Some of the new cases are in one family, 2 cases are in another family, and 1 recently traveled to a theme park. The county also reports 21,953 negative tests. And here's another staff report entitled Memorial Ride to Raise Funds. Danville. A 9/11 memorial ride on Sunday honored the heroes, volunteers, and victims who were involved in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Vehicles of all types gathered in the Village Mall parking lot near McDonald's. Registration was from 8 a.m., followed by a bike blessing at 9:40 a.m. and departure at 10 a.m. Lunch was served by the Paxton Fire Department, and the ride ended at Robin's Bar and Grill in Tilton, about 4:15. The cost was $20 for the single rider and $10 for a passenger. Participants were asked to wear masks and observe social distance. All proceeds will go to the I&I Firefighters Association for its fund to help firefighters' families in need. And here's another staff report entitled Montgomery to Head, Toys for Tots, Danville. Megan Montgomery has been named the new local coordinator of the Vermilion County Toys for Tots campaign, which also covers Covington and other communities in west central Indiana. Montgomery brings a long history of work on behalf of youth to this new position, which is a volunteer role. She has served as a court-appointed special advocate in Vermilion County, working with the courts, government, and private agencies to improve outcomes for abused and neglected children. She currently serves as an adult advisor for a youth development program for young women. She also has served as a substitute teacher in a number of school districts and led large statewide volunteer efforts. In 2018, Montgomery served as statewide chair of the Reaching Out to Our Communities initiative for the Order of the Eastern Star. This effort collected and distributed thousands of books for elementary school readers around the state. I'm honored and deeply gratified to be selected for this important role, Montgomery said. My brother served in the Marines. Serving as a Toys for Tots volunteer has been a holiday tradition for me and members of our family. Last year, the generous residents of this area donated more than 7,500 toys, impacting the lives of nearly 2,000 children and youth. In this very strange year, I think the need will be greater than ever, and I look forward to working together to increase these numbers. Toys for Tots provides toys for children birth to 14 for families to ensure that no child wakes up on Christmas morning without a present under the tree. If your family would like more information or how to receive assistance, visit https://danville-il.toysfortots.org. Montgomery can be reached by phone at 765-791-8149 and via email at danville.il@toysfortots.org. And now we'll turn to our obituaries. The first is Barbara Regina Edmonds, 86, of Danville, passed away at 4:14 p.m. Saturday, September 5th, 2020, at her home. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th, 2020, at Rossville Cemetery, with Pastor George Desmond officiating. Memorials may be made to the Danville Humane Society. Diana Ruth Pierce, 77, of Danville, passed away at 6:49 a.m. on September 8, 2020, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 15, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, September 15th, from 9 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the graveside service wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made in Diana's memory to the American Diabetes Foundation or American Cancer Society. Phyllis J. Yoho Wilson, 87, of Cayuga, passed away on Wednesday, September 9th, 2020, at Clinton Gardens. Cremation was chosen with a memorial service planned at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to the Cayuga Fire Department, 105 South Logan Street, Cayuga, Indiana, 47928. Deborah K. Hayes, 67, of Danville, passed away at her home at 8:40 a.m. on September 9, 2020. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 18, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Robbie Ketcherside will officiate. Burial will be in Johnson Cemetery. Visitation will be held on Thursday, September 17th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the visitation or service wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made in Deborah's memory to the charity of the donor's choice. And now we'll return to reading articles. This one is entitled 12-Year-Old Shows Power of Giving Back by Danette Beckett of the Herald and Review from Decatur. Not many would spend their Saturday mornings cleaning up someone else's neighborhood. However, if you know 12-year-old Nolan Evans, you might find yourself doing just that. On a recent Saturday, Nolan was able to gather cleaning supplies and about 10 volunteers for Nolan's community cleanup day. With the support of the city, the group walks down a Decatur street, removing garbage and debris from public areas. "Let's clean up the community," Nolan cheered as part of his pep talk before the latest cleanup day. The activity may take up to 2 hours, but the volunteers seem to enjoy the time. Nolan's aunt, C. Evans, couldn't resist her nephew's request to help during the latest cleanup day. "He has a super personality," she said. "He is a super soul, the type of personality that is mission-oriented." The community project is only one of Nolan's activities designed to help his city. "That is how he has always been," C. Evans said. "He's always asked the questions like, 'How can I improve humanity? How can I help the world?'" The volunteers are not taken aback by Nolan's age. "There's no age that's too young," C. Evans said, about organizing similar projects. "You can still leave a mark." Nolan said he was searching for an idea to help his community when he found Summer of Service, a community service campaign designed around teenagers and their projects. To get others involved, Nolan contacted all his friends and family to join him. "I just started calling them," he said. One of the first areas to receive Nolan's care was near Kreckel's Dairy Maid on East Main Street. For his most recent cleanup day, the crowd of people, adults and children, gathered in the lot behind the CVS pharmacy on Cantrell Street. Getting people to join the fun is only part of the process. Supplies are also needed. Nolan was able to convince others to help provide garbage bags, trash pickers, and gloves. "I contacted many businesses and organizations," Nolan said. "I also put flyers up at PT Barbecue and gas stations." Nolan's father, Glenn King, was one of the volunteers ready to gather garbage. "Nolan has a vision to help the community," King said. "He is a child of many interests." The Stephen Decatur 8th graders' other activities include computers, singing, acting, and electronics. "He is a man of many traits," his father said. "Anything he wants to do, we'll be there to support him." Watch now. Artist creates images meant to remind Decatur natives of their hometown. Cleaning up Decatur neighborhoods is nothing new to Nolan. The 12-year-old and his mother, Shanina Evans, have often spent a Saturday morning walking around the city simply picking up garbage. "We wanted to go early to pick up the trash," she said about their Saturday morning activity, "and we'd just pick a street." Prairie Avenue Christian Church pastor Jason Butterick joined the most recent cleanup day. "The church's neighborhood has benefited from Nolan's labor. We appreciated Nolan's volunteerism and help," Butterick said. "We were out there for about 2 hours. Along with aunts, uncles, and preachers, Nolan has convinced children to join him, including his 11-year-old brother, Glenn King III. "The workday can be a bit of a scavenger hunt," he said. "There's lots of cardboard and bottles," Glenn said, "but I found a shiny rock." Plans for future cleanup days are uncertain. "Hopefully more people will come out to help clean up Decatur," Shanina Evans said. "It's a great community. Why not clean it up?" Nolan's desire to help the community is contagious. Our next article is entitled In a Pickle, Canning Supplies Are Scarce for Gardeners by Lisa Rathke, Associated Press. Marshfield, Vermont. It's the time of year when gardeners are turning their ripe tomatoes into sauces and salsas and cucumbers into pickles. But a boom in gardening and preparing food at home during the coronavirus pandemic has led to a scarcity of supplies with which to preserve them. From Maine and Vermont to Louisiana and West Virginia, gardeners have reported being in a pickle when it comes to finding certain sized glass jars, the special lids to safely seal them, or the bands with which to screw them on. They've gone from store to store, and some have given in to paying higher prices online for certain precious so-called canning supplies. "We've been everywhere," said Vanessa Ware of Hurricane West Virginia, who said she went to at least a half a dozen stores after running out of supplies for her tomatoes, peppers, corn, and sauerkraut canning. She still had enough leftover jars and lids, but not the bands, so she started looking and looking, and a search of online retail sites proved to be frustrating due to price gouging. The entire canning industry has seen an unprecedented demand for supplies as more consumers prepare meals at home during the pandemic, said a spokesperson for Newell Brands, owner of Ball, which produces mason jars and other supplies. The demand has resulted in supply constraints, extended lead times, and recently limited product availability at stores and online, the spokesperson said. To replenish the stock as quickly as possible, the company said it has increased glass production, found additional lid manufacturers, and expanded its pack-out locations. The scarcity didn't surprise Elizabeth Andrus, project director for the National Center for Home Food Preservation. "There seems to be more people canning than ever before, from the much higher number of inquiries coming into the National Center for help than in the past, and from the large number of participants I hear are attending virtual food preservation classes that extension educators around the country have been offering." Andrus, who is a professor and extension food safety specialist at the University of Georgia, said that more people put in gardens or expanded their existing plots this spring out of initial fears of a possible food shortage or apprehension about going to the grocery store during the pandemic. The Master Gardener Helpline at the University of Vermont Extension has received more than 500 emails and phone calls since mid-March from new gardeners, those who are expanding their gardens or seeking help with plant disease issues, a jump from previous years, said Lisa Chilnyard, the helpline assistant. "I do believe this is due to COVID, as more people are wanting to grow their own food as well as provide food for those who are in need," she said by email. Ware, in West Virginia, was finally able to find some bands for her canning. Her mother-in-law, 2 hours away, brought them to her. She's since been able to get more, but only after paying extra because the bands were sold in a package of 12 with jars and lids, which she didn't need. "We really don't need all those jars when we already had them," she said. Our next article talks about getting your news on reliable sites. At Danville Area Community College, our job is to provide the tools for students to become consumers of information, whether it's for a class or in support of a political position. Since legitimate news outlets also use social media to spread the word, it becomes our responsibility to differentiate between real news and fake. Is your favorite commentary based on legitimate experience and education or opinion? Has a news site won awards for coverage, or has it been reprimanded for shoddy journalism? To be sophisticated consumers of information, we must separate wheat from chaff, learn to fact-check, confirm sources, and tune out trolls. News isn't fake simply because you don't agree with it, and it isn't real just because it went viral on Facebook. Of the four major sources of information, commentary and social media are just the most unreliable sources. Lara Conklin is Director of Marketing and College Relations at Danville Area Community College. Contact her at 443-8798. Or email at lconklin@dac.edu. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for September 14th. I hope you have a great day, and I do look forward to reading with you again soon.